1230 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keyes. The countdown is on to the Republican National Convention, where former President Trump is set to become the party's 2024 nominee. CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns explains that Milwaukee is not friendly territory to the GOP, and the city went 79% for President Biden in 2020.
Wisconsin will also be at center stage. Trump lost the key battleground state in 2020 by just about 20,000 votes, and Republicans are hoping to win it back from Biden.
All the way, Trump 2024.
Orlando Owens is the chairman of the Milwaukee Northside GOP.
Is Biden the candidate you want to run against?
Stay in, Joe, stay in.
Take that as a yes.
I mean, he's not going anywhere.
Pioneering sex therapist Dr. Ruth Westheimer died yesterday at the age of 96. The 4-foot-7-inch tall woman known as Dr. Ruth was a pop sensation and best-selling author. Her co-author and publicist Pierre Lehue on her appeal.
At 10 years old, she was put on a train to Switzerland to escape the Holocaust, never to see her parents again. She went to Palestine after the war and was almost killed in a bomb blast. And then she came here as an immigrant and didn't speak the language and became a college professor and then a sex therapist. And then the next thing you know, she's world famous.
In Israel, the military says it targeted a top Hamas leader in an airstrike that killed at least 71 people. The BBC's Nick Beek was at a press briefing in Jerusalem.
What he did say was that these Hamas leaders had, in his words, cynically set up a compound in what was a civilian area, and that they bear responsibility for what may happen, inserting themselves into a place where there are lots of families. So I think within that there is an acknowledgement that this was a civilian area.
Back in the U.S., no relief from that deadly heat wave. Tony Fracasso at the National Weather Service.
The heat will be shifting eastward through the early part of the week. Hottest temperatures Monday and Tuesday.
This as the Lake Fire in Santa Barbara County burns on for a second week. Ryan Walburn at the National Weather Service says it's the largest blaze in the continental U.S. right now.
Where the fire is burning, it's just those continued hot, dry conditions 24 hours a day that have allowed the fire to really move and continue to burn.
Those deadly extreme heat waves are causing billions in damages that insurance companies won't cover. Data shows longer, more intense, and more frequent heat waves are happening now, three times more often than they did 60 years ago. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A recent poll shows how older voters view the race for president. Mike Mohn reports.
The poll in this crucial battleground state, released by AARP, was conducted right after the first debate between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. In Wisconsin, Trump now leads Biden by 6 percentage points among voters 18 and up, according to this new survey. Pollster Bob Ward helped lead the effort, and he points out that a very high percentage of voters 50 and older are extremely motivated to cast their ballot, more so than younger populations.
There's typically a motivation gap, but not by the size that we're seeing now. And that's what makes this election really different and why it makes the voters 50 plus such a key deciding block in the electorate.
83% of voters 50 and older said a candidate's position on Social Security is very important in shaping their vote. Medicare was at 72%. More than 1,000 likely voters around Wisconsin were interviewed, with an oversampling of nearly 450 likely voters past the age of 50. The age of the leading presidential candidates is dominating national rhetoric about the election, but Ward emphasizes that under this poll, voters strongly indicate they're not too happy about their economic situation.
The debate had its impact on this race, but I think the fundamentals of this race is that people are really feeling an economic pinch.
Despite a strong jobs market, economic factors like inflation and rising prices were cited as a key concern among older adults. Ward says it appears President Biden is taking the blame for that sentiment, but overall, both candidates are not looked at favorably. This is Mike Bowen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine 82. For tonight, a low around 72 with a scattered shower or thunderstorm late. For Sunday, showers and thunderstorms are likely. We'll see a high near 91 with a heat index around 95. Hot again for Monday.
Right now, it's 80.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, the Republican National Convention gets underway. We talked to Greg Treverton from National Security Leaders for America about the ramifications of a possible Trump second term.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and we are powered by Everlight Solar. And here's my conversation with Stephen Olicara. Thanks for coming in, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Second appearance on the Cripescast.
Yes.
And a lot's changed with you since. So kind of like catch us up.
Yes. Well, I think the last time I was on was just as the podcast was getting off the ground in 2020, I think. So we're in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it's wild to think that was maybe 4 years ago.
I know. Time flies. Holy smokes. It is crazy.
Yeah.
But since then, you have kind of, you've gone from sort of focusing on getting millennials engaged in politics.
Right.
To now you're looking more at civility in politics.
Yeah.
And kind of bringing that back into, which I think is incredibly important given the fact that we are in kind of a post-truth, full-on anger mode when it comes to what people see on TV.
Right.
But when you talk to people in person, most of them are like, I don't know why these guys, why are these our options in this political, another election with this option? Really?
Yeah.
We can't do better than this. So I think there's like this gap between sort of what people want and what the American political system has created.
Yeah.
And I think part of that creation is because the extremes get the most attention.
Right.
Social media bubbles have caused a lot of people to go down rabbit holes and sort of positively reinforce conspiracies or anger or whatever, all these social media things. They just feed off anger and they don't feed off of like the kind of balanced centrist work across the aisle. We're all on the same team, even though we may disagree politically.
Right.
And so anyway, catch us up on the specifics of your work. Who have you been working with and when did this start for you?
Yes. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. And it's great to see this studio too. Congrats on pretty cool studio. And I see the Packers jerseys and among the updates since I last came on is I officially became a Packers shareholder.
Dude, went
to the meeting.
You went to the meeting.
Went to the meeting, stuck through the end of the audit committee update, where at that point, most people have left the stadium.
You're like, I get a beer now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It was worth it. And but yeah, to your point, I've seen these trends in our democracy and they're unsustainable in terms of the level of vitriol, the toxic polarization. Now, 2/3 of Americans see people of the other side as being not just different, but evil.
Yeah.
And that's not a culture in which a diverse democracy can exist or thrive. And so I've worked over the years on helping leaders work together across lines of difference, including the political aisle, which I now sound, I know it sounds radical, like how do you get these people to work together? But the reality is exactly what you said, Charlie, which is when you're talking in person and the opportunity to listen and see the humanity in another person, you surprisingly have a lot of areas of common ground. And so it's about how do you create that conversation? And I realized a few years ago that we have a intense need to scale up that kind of conversation. You know, it happens in so many isolated ways around the country, including here in Wisconsin. But how do you scale that up? And that, I believe, happens through culture. It happens through storytelling. Entertainment is a huge part of that. And that's why I'm now leading a group called Bridge Entertainment Labs to do that. I'm working with Arnold Schwarzenegger's Policy Institute, called the Schwarzenegger Institute, as a senior fellow to do that as well. And is trying to find ways that we can elevate what you and I might call like Midwest nice to a higher level of consciousness in our country.
Yeah. And what roadblocks are you coming into? What roadblocks are you facing? Who are the people that are standing in the way, and what do they stand to gain by standing in the way of sort of civility in politics?
Well, you pointed to a lot of them in terms of how social media works, and we're in these echo chambers. And the truth is that division is profitable. There is what I call an outrage industrial complex that makes a ton of money when they're sending you messages on social or email, now increasingly on text message. Maybe you get hit up with those mass texts, and it's meant to scare you, and it's meant to make you feel alarmed and angry. And when you do that, the system profits, because either they're directly getting your money, or at the very least they're getting your eyeballs and your attention. And so that's at the root of the problem right now. And meanwhile, you have politicians and political parties and political media pundits who know that if you feed into that division, you're going to get more traction. And as someone who's been on all the major cable news outlets, I can tell you, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, or Fox News, you have to play into that. Otherwise, you're not getting called back. And so it's going to take a group of people, what I call the exhausted majority, to combat that system and change the incentives. And you can change political incentives, which I've worked many years on, that is dealing with the money in politics and opening up the primary system, because to your point, the extremes do take up the oxygen by design. Or and on top of those political incentive changes, there's also the cultural piece. Do we see portrayals of leaders or citizens listening to people who they disagree with? And we saw an interesting example this past spring. There's this movie called Civil War. I think you've heard of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it depicts a second American Civil War, where you have a few states that have seceded and they're going up against, in the movie, they portray a third term American president. And
what president would ever suggest running for a third term?
You know, I don't know where they got that idea from.
Wow. Interesting. But,
the director, Alex Garland, he is the son of journalists. And so for folks who haven't seen it, the movie is through the lens of American journalists who are going from New York to D.C. and witnessing the horrifying scenes along the way. But the interesting thing from that is the cast, who I had the opportunity to meet with and advise and share some solutions to polarization as they were about to go on their global press tour, was, you know, one of the actors, for example, Wagner Moura, he said, "I realized through filming this movie how important it is to be listening to people whom I disagree with." Mm. And Nick Offerman, who plays that third term president, spoke to that as well, that we need to be having real conversations now. And so I think even the cast members who were not politically oriented or active before the movie, were not concerned day to day with issues of polarization, they saw that this is a real threat to our country and they want to be a part of the solution. So more of that, more where you have cultural influencers who are modeling what healthy conversation and healthy disagreement can look like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really cool. That's certainly something that I try to do here, actually, on this podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know that I always succeed. And there's a lot of temptations, like, you know, you've got Trump, you know, saying that Milwaukee's a horrible city, for instance. I mean, you hear something like that, and part of me is like, I want to combat that by, you know, saying something about that, that says you don't know Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Every time you come here, it's in an armored vehicle. You go to some place to either gain money or push, you know, your politics. And then you leave. What do you even know about Milwaukee?
Right.
But it's like, what is even the point of that? I mean, is that just another proxy war for like anger? And is that just like because he'll say, I never said it, you know, and the people who want to believe him will believe him. The people who don't want to believe him won't believe him. And so, I mean, but how do you have real conversations about these things when truth is so far from something that people value?
Right.
In a lot of ways. And I think you brought this up with cable news. As soon as Fox News became Fox News, and I'm just using Fox News not because it's on the right, but because Fox News was the first news station to say, we're going all in on we are a right leaning organization,
right?
Which then brought on hard left leaning, you know, MSNBC and all that. And I feel like the more technology has progressed, the more we become polarized.
Right.
And I think that one thing we have to do is, you know, look at these social media platforms and figure out, is there a way to realistically get these social media organizations that benefit off of political polarization to say, this isn't good, we won't do it? Is there any way to hold them accountable?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most promising solutions that I see, and I talked about this actually when I ran for office here in Wisconsin, was the importance of not regulating speech, which is often where the controversy comes from around this conversation, is regulating the algorithms. Because the way the social media companies express themselves and tip the scales in favor of outrage, like, I got to share and kind of peel the curtain back a little bit on this Trump Milwaukee is horrible, you know, story, is it's an example of how the outrage industrial complex works. And I think it's wrong that he made that comment. And I don't doubt that he did. The journalist who picked up on that, a guy named Jake Sherman, who works for an organization called Punchbowl News. I've known Jake. He was the one who was sourced for all the stories that went nationally. He wasn't in the room. He was quoting, using sources that were in the room, but he knew that particular quote without any context on what was really said will travel far and wide. And the social media companies and their algorithm are obviously emphasizing a story like that, even when none of us who are in the room don't really know the context of that. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that we need to make these algorithms more neutral, essentially. And there are ways that you could do this. So, for example, on X right now, you have the two feeds. You have the For You feed, and then you have the normal feed that comes out chronologically. And I, as someone who's aware of all of these forces, still often click on the For You because it's hitting your dope, you know, it's unleashing this dopamine rush in your head so often. It's hard to not be in the For You feed. But that's a really good example of, you have the algorithm emphasized on one side and more neutral on the other side. But if you have a more neutral algorithm, I think you take some of the outrage out of the conversation.
Yeah. And but we are a people.
Yeah.
And the social media giants are run by people, kind of people and algorithms and robots, you know, kind of. So but we are in a society that's profit driven.
Yeah.
And people create profit by going down the anger rabbit hole. So people are going to be people. Business is going to be business.
Yeah.
And what's going to stand in the way?
One interesting trend I'm seeing is, you mentioned the cable news companies, all of them are losing viewership right now. Like, on a good day. So one of the reasons why I'm working actually more on entertainment is because I'm looking at the trends. I see that on a good night, maybe CNN has 1 million viewers, which is not close to what it used to be. All, if you look at the longer term trends, all three major cable news outlets, are you losing a ton of their viewership, and just the money is not there and the eyeballs are not there. And I think part of it is because people are getting so exhausted. So if you are constantly in this cycle of it's, to me, it's like, it's no different than like a drug addiction. Like you get this like short-term high, but eventually there's going to be a crash, and that crash can manifest itself in a number of different ways. And people as a result are having an increase in mental health issues, and you're seeing just an exhaustion, and that is starting to reflect in the ratings as well. And so now there's a need for media entrepreneurs to be entering into this space and saying, how can I deliver a better product that is entertaining and useful to people and find a way to attract more viewers? And I think that's very possible. Now, to your point with the social media, you're definitely playing on human emotions, and that has to be profit driven as well. So totally understand that. But I think that each of us who use these tools can make a choice of how we want to use them. I once had the honor of having a conversation with Dr. King's eldest son at a conference that my last organization was hosting. And one of the questions that's always been on my mind as I learned about Dr. King's history was, how would he be showing up today as a leader and as an activist? Would he be using social media? Would he be online all the time, or would he not be? And so I finally got the chance to pose this question to his eldest son, Martin Luther King III. And he said, my father would be using the modalities available to him to spread messages of love and justice. So it was always about getting the message out to people and using the tools available for that. And so I do think there is a choice that each of us can make to use these tools in the right way and dramatize it. That was a big thing that Dr. King and John Lewis and these major civil rights heroes did, is they dramatized these stories to force people's attention on the things that matter. And I think we have the opportunity to do that ourselves today.
Yeah, it is definitely, it's tough. You need a lot of critical thinking for a lot of people who are having a hard time just working. The keeping up with inflation, all that, putting food on the table, things are costing more, all that sort of stuff. So it's hard to get people to kind of get themselves in a good position to right. then think, okay, how can I give back to society? I think that's one element of it. But then on top of that, let's say you are in a good place, and let's say you do want to contribute positively to society. Would the solution be getting on these social media platforms and sort of educating yourself from various different sources, and what you put out, what you retweet, what you tweet, or whatever the hell it is, what you put on any of your social media platforms? I mean, so yeah. Is it really just up to the people to make this world a better place?
Yes. Yes. Radical concept. This is one of my favorite easy solutions that everyone at home can utilize right now, which is in the same way that you want to eat a healthy diet and diversify your diet. So you don't, as much as we would want to, we don't want to eat a brat every single day, right? And I know I'm...
Yeah, speak for yourself. No. I see what you're saying.
And I know I'm, you know, you're not the right audience for that message.
Yeah, find another analogy on the Cripes cast, all right?
You know, I just had the chance to officiate a buddy's wedding in Madison. And during one of the speeches, they shared how they have brat Mondays. They have brats for dinner every Monday. And, you know, there's something to that. But the point being, you don't want to have brats and candy or other food that could be bad for your system on a daily basis. This is, of course, okay to have it once a while. And so the message is to diversify your diet. And the same exact thing applies to your personal media intake. You want to diversify your media diet. And that is something we have the power to do every single day. And what that means is that you want to follow a variety of news sources, not just on the left, right, and center, but another key distinction is establishment versus more independent sources. So, for example, and it doesn't mean that you're tuning into news that you agree with all the time. But for example, if you're reading the New York Times every day, you might want to tune into and hear what people on the Joe Rogan podcast are saying. Or if you're looking for a conservative commentator, someone like David French is really interesting to listen to. They're probably, if you're finding a way to, hear what, Jimmy Kimmel might be saying on an evening monologue, and, maybe you hear a few things that Ben Shapiro is saying, that's a diverse media diet right there. And similarly with your social media, you follow a number of different outlets. So diversify your media diet is the main message there. And that's one way that you can combat the polarization system and take this into your own hands.
So you've mentioned a few people that you would recommend listening to diversify your media diet. Mm-hmm. Do you have any organizations sort of in the middle, those independent journalism? Because it would be great to get your sort of sign off being an expert in these. Cause I feel like a lot of people, they're like, okay, great. I'd like to find great local news organizations, but how do I know if what I'm reading, if these are an actual good organization? Just have a few organizations in the middle that you can point people to.
Yeah. I'll share two and then I'll make a broader point after that. So the two that are really cutting against the grain to, I think, present more fair combination of perspectives. One is called allsides.com, which is an organization in the space that I come from, the depolarization space, and they're providing news from these different perspectives and helping aggregate these different perspectives as well. So you know kind of what you're reading before you read it. The second is, it's so interesting. I've seen a number of these former anchors on CNN or other major news outlets who become sort of like reformed. And one really good example is Jessica Yellen, the former CNN anchor at the White House. She now has a great effort called News Not Noise that you can follow. I think they're primarily on Instagram. And then one other that I'd point to is a cable news outlet that's now like the fourth largest cable news outlet. They're growing very quickly. It's called News Nation.
News Nation, yeah.
Yeah. And for me, I, in the last couple of years, I've sought to kind of walk to walk and be appearing on media outlets that I think are more part of the solution. And so I've done a number of appearances on News Nation. And the thing I can confidently say, having now been on a bunch of different outlets, is that with News Nation, they were not trying to advance a narrative. They were trying to advance a healthy discussion, and they were okay with nuance. Like I went on once and we were talking about President Biden's student debt plan last year. And I was coming on as the, former Democratic, politician or whatever. And I said something that was complimentary of President Biden in terms of the value of that student debt relief proposal. But I also critiqued an aspect of it, which led to it going to the Supreme Court and not really creating the change that we wanted it to. In other words, some of that change had happened through the legislative branch as opposed to the executive branch. Mm-hmm. And so we go off the air and I knew I was probably going to hear it from a few people that I just gave a nuanced, honest perspective, which, by the way, very radical to do in the national media. And some people did crack some jokes at me like, wait, you're here supposed to be the Democrat here and you're critiquing Joe Biden. And I said, yeah, I'm just saying what I think is honestly true. And that I think is important for people at home to be aware of. And to their credit, they invited me back on and many times after that. And so I'm just trying to give a little bit of the behind the scenes for people of how the system works. And that News Nation, I think, is another really interesting one for people to tune into.
Well, that's great. And then what was kind of your broader point? You said you want to make a broader point as well.
Yeah, well, I'll just say that the broader point is that there's a reason why these few, there are only a few of them that I can point to. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that most outlets are operating under the current incentives that they have, as opposed to trying to challenge them. And by the way, that's just human nature. It's usually easier to go down the convenient path as opposed to the less convenient one. But the way that you can combat that is just, you can, like, I'm not anti-hyperpartisan news either, right? I just choose to tune into those, but then balance that with others. And so I'm not saying listen to News Nation all day, although it would be good to introduce that to your diet, I believe. But, you know, just try and get a combination of those out there. And hopefully for any entrepreneurs who are tuning in, they are looking for ways to be a part of this. And by the way, you're a media entrepreneur yourself. I'm curious, I mean, if you have thoughts on how to kind of cut through with more positive messages, because you've done that.
Well, I've tried. This podcast is definitely, look, it's not the sexiest podcast in the world. I know that.
I beg to differ. I mean, you've got a Charlie Barron's Packers jersey back there.
Yeah, and, I know.
You know, and this Barron's branded brandy.
Yeah, there you go. By the way, you know, if you want a little swig of that.
I don't know. Has it been? Okay.
It's been opened. It's okay. Been cracked. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Can we?
Yeah, you want a little deal?
Yeah.
There you go. There's
you know.
Yeah, that's just a nice yeah, little snort you for you to have there. Right. Here, I'll have some too. There you go.
We're close to
cheers.
Happy hour. All right. Yeah. Cheers, buddy. Yeah. All right.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for the Todd Allball Show.
CBS News Brief. Republicans are hyped for next week's national convention in Milwaukee, but CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns reports some voters are wistful.
At a bar across from the convention center, voters echoed a sentiment we've been hearing all year.
I wish we had two different choices, both for the Republicans and for the Democrats.
The popular and feisty sex therapist known as Dr. Ruth died yesterday at the age of 96. Her publicist, Pierre Lehue.
She had assorted problems. She had a couple of strokes. She was in a wheelchair. She's been in a bed in her living room under hospice for about 4 or 5 days.
That heat isn't done in the West, where records are continuing to fall. Tony Fracasso with the National Weather Service.
Fairly widespread from Northern California across Nevada, Utah, maybe Salt Lake City, close to a record high. It should be around 106. Denver's looking warm again, up around 101. The record's 100.
CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Brewers upset by the Nationals. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers losing to the Washington Nationals last night, 5-2 to AmFam Field in Milwaukee. The Nationals able to snap a 5-game losing streak. Brewers right-hander Freddie Peralta struggled, giving up 4 runs on 10 hits through 5 innings. Manager Pat Murphy after the loss.
I mean, I think Freddie made a few mistakes, but I thought generally he threw the ball good. And, you know, they just lost 5 in a row, so they're kind of hungry to win, and they put some balls in play. And, yeah, and their starter did a nice job to keep us at bay.
The Nationals' Jackson Rutledge held Milwaukee to just 3 hits on 2 walks over 4 2/3 innings in his first ever major league start. A familiar face, Jesse Winker, who struggled last year with the Brewers, crushed a home run 403 feet to right center field, his 11th home run of the year. He also drove in a run with an RBI double. Elsewhere, the Cubs beat the Cardinals 5-1 in St. Louis. Chicago's now won 5 in a row. The Reds got past the Marlins 7-4. Pirates over the White Sox 4-1. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
WAUK weather is sponsored by Planet X in Brookfield. Stocked with the freshest cigars at the best prices, 173rd and West Blue Mound Road.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine, 82. For tonight, a low around 72 with a scattered shower or thunderstorm late. For Sunday, showers and thunderstorms are likely. We'll see a high near 91 with a heat index around 95. Hot again for Monday.
Right now, it's 80.
Introducing Brookfield's newest cigar and vape shop, Planet X. They have endless options with their wide variety of products. Experience luxury in their expansive cigar room, stocked with only the freshest cigars. And the best part? Planet X offers the cheapest prices in Brookfield. Open to serve you Monday through Saturday, 8 a.m. until midnight, and Sundays from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Come in today for cigars, vapes, and much more at Planet X.
Pete Schwabba.
Monday night, we will stream live on Facebook, X, and YouTube from 7 to 8 p.m. during the RNC and be back on the air live from 8 to 9 p.m., where we welcome the master of radio magic, Gizmo.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, if you're just tuning in, this is the Cripes Cast on Civic Media, and here's my conversation with Stephen Olicara. the idea of creating this podcast, for instance, I've certainly tried to focus on issues, not like politics. And I hope that, you know, over time, people view it as a place that they can go to get informed on these various issues. I'm not trying to make it the funniest podcast in the world. I'm not trying to make it like the sexiest podcast in the world, but I am trying to give people information that they can take and have it be part of like their media diet. Now, the other side of that is like, it's not hitting those triggers in people as much. Like the, if I went super far down one path and was like, this is the way to feel on this issue, it might get bigger numbers. So I'm trying to live in this area in the middle intentionally, hoping that this is kind of like a bridge where whatever side of the political aisle you're on, you can at least ingest this information.
Right.
And I'm trying to use my journalism skills or training or whatever to just get information across. And but, you know, I think we'll see over time. I think it's going to take a lot of things like this. I don't think one media outlet, I'll take mine as an example, that sits in the middle is going to be enough to, and by sits in the middle, I don't mean, I just mean doesn't have, tries to not have a slant. Or if I have a bias, I try to come out with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, trying to find places where information can be consumed, I think is going to take a lot of people, you know, going into issues that they care about and honestly presenting them and having honest conversations with other people and sharing things that are just delivering facts about a certain topic. It's a hard thing to do as a consumer.
Yeah.
It's a hard, because you don't have that, that knee-jerk reaction of, oh my gosh, I've got to share this with this person because it's not a, this is definitive. It's like we are all in this gray area and we're just trying to bring facts and information to be king again and not entertainment.
Right.
Or not, excuse me, not entertainment, but not rage.
Right.
You know, and not hard bias.
Yeah.
Because at the end, I'm trying to seek out as much truth as possible and just let people do with that truth what they will.
Right.
As opposed to trying to influence, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you made a really important distinction when you talk about you know, being sort of in the center and down the middle, not ideologically. That's not, I think, what you're saying. You're saying that you want to create a space where information from different perspectives can be shared. And I highlight that distinction because too often we describe someone who wants to be a bridge builder, someone who wants to have conversation across difference, as someone who doesn't have views, someone who doesn't have principles. And I think that couldn't be further than the truth. A strong bridge builder is someone who is bringing their full life story to the table and has the humility to listen to someone else's. And you and I both share music as a passion.
Yes.
And the best metaphor that I could share here is when I was first learning how to play jazz music, I went to the Conservatory of Music here, and on the first day of jazz camp, the guy says, put your instruments away, because the number one skill in playing jazz music is listening. And we spent the entire first session listening to John Coltrane and Miles Davis and Oscar Peterson and all the greats. And so when I played in groups like that, and I played in my other bands around here in Milwaukee, you realize that it's about listening. It's about a call and response. It's about bringing your story, but you want to hear others as well and put your original take. When you're riffing back and forth on it, that's what a call and response truly is. And finally, it's about being fully present in conversations. Like jazz is an improvised art form. And so if you're not fully present, you're going to be, you know, you're not going to be contributing to the conversation on stage. You're going to be somewhere else. And so I share that as three parts for people to think about how to be a bridge builder in your own life, not just in politics, but in any, you know, in your daily lifestyle.
Yeah, I that's a great analogy, jazz, and the idea of listening. And I think to the thing that social media likes to do is sort of take, you brought up Dr. King, bring up Martin Luther King's words. I think it's Martin Luther King. It's always there with his image. I don't know what, if he said it, but silence is violence, kind of thing. And I think that that, you know, was, that gets pushed out anytime there's like a major world or social conflict. If you're not, excuse me, if you're not saying something, you are part of the problem.
Right.
But I think in this social media landscape that we're now in, silence may have been violence back in the 60s, you know, when not everybody had an instrument. And by instrument, I mean a social media account where they can just fire it off. So many people are not listening. They're almost going from one trending outrage to the next,
right,
playing their freaking instrument, not listening, not pulling back, not observing the larger landscape of, are you winning this game of chess or are you just a pawn in somebody else's game? And so I think that that is that. I'm not saying don't say something on an issue that you believe is important, but I think what I am saying is don't do it for the social media clout or to, you know, just piss off your neighbor who doesn't like a flag that you're flying in your yard or whatever. Do it to really have an honest and humble look at what's true and how you can perpetuate truth in this world.
Well said.
I think.
Yeah, well said. I think that's very wise. I think it is. This is a time for people to make their voices heard, to be participating and sharing your views on topics. And the distinction we're making here is that you want to, you want to be rooted in your convictions and be rooted in a curiosity about how other people are thinking and living your life, and do that if no other reasons for self-interest, the self-interest of wanting to make a stronger argument, of wanting to make real change in your community, as opposed to just being a kind of a slacktivist who's just putting something out and not moving the needle on an issue. You make real change by building coalitions in this country. You don't make change by just being by yourself and being, you know, preaching to the choir in your echo chamber. And by the way, a third reason for doing, operating in this way that often does not get talked about is for your own health. The psychologists have found that you will show up healthier every single day if you're not harboring this rage and anger against your fellow human beings on a daily basis. If you're coming with an approach of grace and understanding and curiosity, you're going to be happier every day and probably live a longer life. So for no other reason, do it for those reasons. And to go back to the musical metaphor, the most inclusive spaces I've ever felt were in my bands, whether it was a rock band, a funk band, or a hip hop band, or my folk band, or a jazz group. It was people who genuinely had empathy, people who genuinely wanted to hear each other's stories, who truly could see you and hear you at the same time. And because you create that kind of open and inclusive space, the music and the art you're creating was so much better, because it's like a 1+1=3 kind of dynamic. When you're truly kind of jiving and jamming together in that open mindset, you're reaching a new plateau. So to use a football analogy here, it's not about
meeting. That's good. Go right from music to football. I could feel all the people who don't like music or don't play music being like, can I just get a football analogy for this thing?
Let's get that one in there. It's not about meeting on the 50-yard line. It's about meeting on a new playing field, you know, so
like a baseball diamond, or
you could meet on a baseball diamond, you know, soccer field, you know, wherever you might meet. But the point being is that, because you made this point really well, that like this podcast is not ideologically centrist, I think is what you were trying to say. And so that's what the 50-yard line would be. Look, there might be some good solutions at the 50-yard line, but you know, a lot of Dr. King's solutions were initially seen as very radical. That might have been way off on one side or the other. And the key, though, is to build in his case, a multiracial, multigenerational kind of coalition for change. And that's an evolutionary process. So it's not about this kind of transactional kind of give and take, and you wind up at the 50-yard line with some solution that no one likes. It's about listening and having an evolution of thought that meets on that soccer field or that baseball diamond.
Yeah. And, you know, I appreciate what you, like, I think people who listen to this podcast know that ideologically, there's a lot of issues. Maybe I lean one way or another on, but my point isn't even to drive my ideology home. It's just to seek more facts for people to listen to and make their own decision. Like, I'm not here to tell you one way or another. I don't think that people listen to that in an effective way.
Right.
And I think just getting information out there is maybe the most effective way to over time bring about actual change, I hope. But I don't know. You know, so, I mean, I go through spurts of being hopeful and then a little bit, you know, like, oh, gosh, how are we going to do this with all of the finance up against truth, with all of, you know, the social media wave. And now, you know, you kind of have like it's only getting more advanced technology. Yeah. And we've seen that as technology grows. I feel like Midwest Nice almost it's an inverse relationship.
Yeah.
You know, as technology progresses more and more, like people meeting face to face, people picking up the phone and calling. You ever get a text message and you're like, oh, to hell with this guy, you know, but if they would have called and said, yeah, man, sure. Or just sure.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, sure. As opposed to sure.
Right.
And so I think
did this happen recently for you?
It happens all the time. It happens all the time, especially with text messaging is people or emails. People are reading an email or a text message from their place of their most insecurity. And so therefore they will attribute kind of maybe their worst case scenario in their mind or how they're feeling in that moment onto the words you put on paper. So I think anytime you can call somebody and have a conversation as opposed to text with them or, you know, blast something on social media. And then also, I think just not be afraid to have conversations with people in your family who you disagree with, your friends who you disagree with, not avoid the topics. But again, so much can really be like my favorite thing to do in a conversation with someone I disagree with is to find genuine and new ways of asking the same question. And that's why, you know, and I think by asking somebody, why do they believe that? Well, how do you think this is going to work? Like just finding these ways of saying why and get to the root of their basis. And then you at least have something, you know exactly where they're coming from. And then maybe you can think of a way to satisfy what they want with another solution. But if you can't even get to the root of what somebody whose mind you're trying to change wants, how are you ever going to change it?
Absolutely. And certainly someone who doesn't feel seen or heard, they're not going to be changing any opinions because you're more in a fight or flight mentality as opposed to a listen and learn mentality. By the way, one superpower for doing that, which you have in spades, is comedy. You know, comedy, you know, there's a phrase in our space, which is it's hard to hate up close, but even further, it's hard to hate someone if you're laughing together too. And so you're putting some really good vibes, you know, out into the universe with comedy. And I'll share just one example. I think for people to hear something concrete might be helpful with this. So the last organization I ran, Millennial Action Project, now called Future Caucus, has these chapters in different states around the country. And it's Democrats, Republicans, Independents, young elected officials who have a fresh perspective. And in Mississippi, we had a chapter. And the legislators at their first happy hour, so a lot of alcohol involved, by the way, in bridge building as well, is they brought up the issue of their flag. The Mississippi state flag has had a Confederate emblem on it, and they felt like maybe we should change this for future generations. And at that time, it was like 2017, they felt like some of the members who were part of this caucus, it's called a Future Caucus, didn't feel like they could move it. It's just too controversial, too radioactive of an issue. But they kept talking. They kept drinking. They kept building relationships. They built genuine friendships through this whole process. Well, you fast forward to 2020, and in the context of the George Floyd and the racial reckoning that we're having in this country, that same group, which had been meeting regularly, working on different issues from workforce to all kinds of issues, they decided to take up this one more time. And within the caucus, they built enough of a consensus, Democrats and Republicans, let's change our state flag. So they voted on it, agreed to it as a caucus. They brought it to the state legislature, passes the state legislature in a very red state. Republicans have a supermajority with roughly about 75% of the to 80% of the legislature. And the Republican governor signs it into law. And then the people got to create a new flag that's more emblematic of the future of that state, where young people felt like they could have a stake in their future. And it was good morally. It was good in many other ways. It felt like they would be able to attract more business to the state as well. That to me is what transformative change looks like. This was not like 50 plus one people got on board with it. It was 75 to 80%. And I know one of the Republican legislators who's part of our group lost his office probably on that vote. And he felt like that was one of the most important votes he had taken. And so my point being that this went from something that was radioactive, we can't talk about this at all. You keep talking, you keep respecting each other, you know, you continue having those beers, and then the time is right. And all of that comes to a head when you really trust each other and they're able to get this passed. We've seen examples like that all across the country. The question is, do those examples get into the zeitgeist or not? When we pass bipartisan gun violence prevention or climate change legislation, or we pass gerrymandering reform in different states, all with bipartisan support, does that get the attention? Do people tune into that? Or do we choose not to tell those stories? And that's a big part of my calling right now, is to bring those stories to the forefront.
I think, very well said. The first point you're making is that change is in this, again, bring up the social media thing, a lot of what we're kind of like a bunch of fixers.
Yeah.
A little bit, because we have this power, I guess, like a social media platform where it's democratized in a way that anybody can say anything. So to a degree, everybody wants to fix the problem or at least sound off on why it's wrong, as opposed to looking at sort of a long term thing. So I think long term change and focusing, even not just on this election coming up, but whoever gets in office, it's going to take, like, the engagement needs to continue and it needs to be pushed whatever side you're on, and having these conversations and not being afraid to talk to people on the other side of the aisle, and therefore not villainizing people on the other side of the aisle, even if they are so far from what you believe. Having a conversation is only going to help and allow them to see your humanity, you to see theirs, and again, find that common ground.
And like I said, and I'd be curious if you have any reflections on this, just the role of comedy. I feel like the way that you've been able to build bridges in a lot of ways, and I'm not just talking about left versus right, I feel like you've built a really powerful bridge between the coasts and the Midwest. You know, there are all kinds, you know, and I'm, whether it's in New York, DC or LA, people have their various stereotypes about, you know, the Midwest, and you're able to, in some ways, bring humanity to that through comedy. And I actually think that's really important, because right now we have like politics by stereotype. And that, I think, is helping to drive some of the division right now. But if you can help start a conversation through comedy across all these differences, you can start off on a different foot. And, I was just thinking about this the other day, like, you know, The Daily Show, they were trying to find a host, right? And they ultimately kind of go back to Jon Stewart and have this kind of revolving cast. And I think about this in my world with the different commentators and the journalists who have national platforms. We're the people from the Midwest, the people who are like, who can bring that Midwestern voice. And so this is not just my plug for The Daily Show to hire you as a correspondent,
yeah,
which they should do. But on top of that, to be elevating more Midwestern voices.
Well, thank you for the kind words. I think, to your point, comedy, anytime you can make people laugh, you can make people listen. Because And it's also kind of walking a line and really, you know, there's a lot realizing what are the hills to die on, you know, or what are the things to really go all out for? Like, you want to say something is wrong when something is wrong. But if you say something is wrong and it makes the people who believe that wrong dig in deeper into their thing, then is what you're doing actually effective? You know, it goes back to this silence is violence. But yeah, also just blindly saying your opinion that you borrowed from someone else off of social media, that's violence too, you know? So it's like, I think it's twofold. I think one is, if you are in comedy, or I myself in comedy, it's usually trying to think like, most of the show I want to bring people together, you know, and then there may be one or two things where I think this is something we can all agree on, but it's how do you frame it? And the only way you can frame it is by talking to a lot of people that you disagree with, understanding how they can hear it, you know, because I think at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. We do. And I think people on the right are more hesitant to allow government to control their lives, and people on the left are more hesitant to allow big business to control their lives. But what we all can agree on is none of us want to be controlled by like a system, yeah. You know? So how can we find ways that maybe are outside of the options that we're getting from politicians and from media outlets? And how can we find more creative ways? It just takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
On behalf of everybody listening to this podcast now.
It's worth it, though, because I grew up in the same area that you grew up, here in Brookfield / Elm Grove, in that school district. And there was almost no one who looked like me or shared my background in that school system. And yet we were able to build community together. We were able to build a lot of great things together. And you know, it was really an honor to just officiate the wedding of one of those friends from that, you know, stage of life. And I've reflected on that a lot, because I saw many temptations in those years to just isolate myself. No one here, you know, kind of understands my background, you know, my parents being immigrants from India. And for those who are tuning in who don't know what Brookfield and Elm Grove is, it's a when you and I were going to school in those areas, it
was very white.
Yeah, it was like 90. I think I looked it up on Wikipedia once. It was like 98% white in those days. It's diversified a little bit since then. But the point being, though, is could have isolated, but instead was part of a larger whole. Music was a really important reason for that. Honestly, if I didn't have music, I probably would have gone down a different track. But the work that you're describing is worth it, because that story is a microcosm of what America is. The fact that we can be fish out of water in these communities and yet find positive ways to associate with each other. Did I hear things that were insensitive or not the best things, you know, hurled at me growing up? Absolutely. But I didn't think it was with bad intent. It might have been due to lack of exposure. But it was important to be able to build those positive associations. And when you zoom out, America has never been tried before. This experiment in creating a diverse democracy where we come from all these different backgrounds, we look different, and we try and coexist and reconcile our differences through the system of government, has never succeeded in the past before. And yet we've been struggling, but doing better than any other previous society has before. And so it's worth it. It's a hard thing, like you were saying. But I've just seen too much beauty in the days I had in my formative years growing up here. When I look back on that, I have a smile because of the ideas that we're talking about. So it's definitely worth it.
Well, dude, thank you so much for coming on and for, you know, being somebody to like take your story and transcend it and see how you can kind of take your microcosm and translate it to a larger thing across the country. So appreciate you. And thanks, if people want to follow what you're doing, how can they find you?
Yeah, just on social media, at Stephen Olicara on X and Instagram and all that good stuff. And then the organization that's working on storytelling to bridge divides, it's called Bridge Entertainment Labs.
Awesome. Folks, that's all the time we have now. But if you want to listen to my full conversation, just check out the Cripescast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot in the walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
You're listening to The Shaw,
WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.